This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now the finale of Ms. Marvel. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Ms. Marvel, episode 6, No Normal. Wow. So if you haven't watched the finale, huge spoilers. Big things go down here. We're obviously going to talk about the series as a whole, but specifically about this episode. And to that point, here's a broad overview of what happens in the episode. Again, spoiler warning here. Stay away if you have not watched on Disney Plus. Watch it first.
You can watch it. You can watch it first, or watch like 10 minutes and then listen to 10 minutes. That's a nice way to do it, right?
No, yeah, I don't know if it's going to.
Oh, is that bad?
I feel like we're going to jump right to
the end. We're going to jump all over the fucking place.
Probably.
That's pretty fair.
Well, because the first 10 minutes is mainly just talking about the Marvel flip. You know what I mean? So.
Oh yeah. So you can. Skip
I'm sorry to tell you,
podcast.
Pete. We edit that part out just so the listeners to know. With all of your rants,
talked about that. So on the Ms. Marvel finale, Kamala is back in Jersey City. She tells her parents and family about her secret identity, though they already know because of the classic Kamala gossip train.
Speakerphone gets you every time.
And in fact, all of her friends now know about her secret identity as they help her try to keep Cameron safe from the Department of Damage Control that comes after him. We get an agent who goes rogue, attacks the high school. They fight back against her. And ultimately, Cameron does escape thanks to Kamala, who becomes a big hero in front of the entire world, or at least Jersey City.
And which is the world to some of us.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And by the end of the episode, she is ready to full-fledged be a hero thanks to her new name, Ms. Marvel, given to her by her dad, her costume given to her by her mom. So the whole family has gotten the act. And then we got two big twists here right at the end that I'm sure we're going to talk about. One, find out.
Shocking.
Should we talk about this right now? I feel like we should.
It makes me very mad, and I don't want to. I want to talk about the things I like first before I talk about the things that make me mad.
Okay, well, I'll touch on these, and then we'll come back to them later. The first one is it certainly seems to be very strongly implied that Kamala is a mutant based on things that happened in the episode. Yep, heard that.
Oh, Pete, put away that clarinet. We've got a podcast to do.
Oh, sorry.
He's a one-man band over there. And then in the mid-credits scene, we see something that may actually be a scene from the Marvels as Carol Danvers and Kamala seem to switch places. Lots of questions.
Is that what's happening? That scene was very confusing.
Yeah, it seemed like she turned into a white lady at the end, which really made me mad.
That's what I thought, too. And I was like
don't turn into a white lady.
That's the whitest lady of them all.
Why would you?
Captain White Lady, technically.
Doing all these amazing things with this amazing character, and then you have her turn into a white lady at the end? What kind of shit
is
that?
Well, hold on. I'm going to just to make it a little easier so we don't come into this podcast with this much anger right off the bat, I'll throw out what I think is happening in the final scene there, because again, it is not 100% clear, but Kamala is in her room. This is the mid-credit scene of the episode. Kamala is in her room. She's lying on her bed. Her mom calls to her when suddenly she's sucked into her closet. And out comes Brie Larson as Captain Marvel with a new haircut, with a new uniform, looks around and pictures herself and goes, no, and runs out. And that's all we get. Now, my suspicion of what's happening
here
based on
that's what I was yelling, too.
No. She's so white, her name is Brie. Like, that's...
Oh, man. That's rind of an insult.
Okay. Wow. Well, let's get into our high-end cheese work.
Before these jokes get moldy, why don't we move on and actually explain the scene?
Please stop.
I agree with you guys. At first, I thought we were actually doing a weird throwback to the very beginnings of Ms. Marvel from the comic books, where she uses her shape-changing powers to look like her hero, Captain Marvel, before she realizes she can look like herself and be her own hero. So that felt like a huge step back for me. But based on the way that Brie Larson is playing the scene and looking at those pictures, I think instead what we've had here is some sort of classic Captain Marvel Negabands situation. And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, the original Captain Marvel in the comics had these two bands, slammed them together and turned into Rick Jones or potentially other humans. So they would switch places. It was a very like Captain Marvel Shazam type situation.
Oh.
same sort of thing.
Same name, technically.
Exactly.
As well.
And that's a whole bag of worms that we don't necessarily want to open up. But
I keep my worms in a bag, too. I'm not the only one.
A duffel bag, right? So you can take them.
Yeah, I have a lot of worms, so I need a big bag.
I go with a metal can.
In any case, I think that's what's happening here, is they're switching places, not actually being replaced. So Kamala has gone somewhere. Our Captain Marvel, Brie Larson, has come out, and they're going to have to figure that out and what exactly is going on there when we head into the Marvels, the feature film in 2023.
Oh, okay. That's what I wasn't sure if that was going to be a TV show or a feature film.
No, okay. That's the movie coming out next year. It's going to feature Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, and also, I don't know, what are we calling her? Photon? Monica Rambeau?
Yeah, there you go.
So it's going to be three of them. Presumably some other people. We'll see what happens. But to that point, given that Captain Marvel seems to be wearing some sort of bands, there's probably more ties, more things going on with these bangles than we not necessarily know right now.
It's a classic switcheroo.
It just seems like a shitty idea that at the end of an amazing episode to have somebody then turn into a white lady. I just...
I don't think that was the implication there, though I get why you're upset about it.
But I will say, to Pete's point, it was a sort of unexplained moment in a show, and because it sort of rhymes with what was happening at the beginning of the series, where she was like, I want to be her, and then she takes her place. It did feel sort of like, oh, is that purposeful, that connection?
Well, I mean, that might be the theme or one of the themes that they're playing off of in the Marvels, potentially, because I could see them being like, Yeah, this stuff happened in Miss Marvel, but we're going to make it nice and clean and easy as an in for new viewers who haven't necessarily watched the TV series. And so you get Kamala is Miss Marvel. She's been Miss Marvel for, you know, a couple of weeks, maybe a month or something like that. We meet her as a huge fan of Captain Marvel, and she's like, this is the person who inspired me to be a hero. And then she switches places. So to your point, we do get that thing in the movie, potentially.
But what was weird was, like, we kind of were just getting to understand this character and really get it. And then to not do such a clean move at the end was just kind of like, well, why would you do this to me? Like, the fact that she got
me,
it's so excited about, like, holy shit, I have the same name as Carol Danvers. Like, to see her geeking out was enough. And to kind of, like, have her stand in there was cool. Like, maybe show her somewhere else, but have her turn into her at the end there.
I think it was a classic. I didn't have as much of a problem with it as you guys did, I guess. I saw it as just a classic what's happening mid-credit scene from Marvel, which honestly we haven't gotten in a while. Like, most of the mid-credit scenes have either been jokes or very self-explanatory. When back in the day, it was think about where they just pulled out that scene with Bucky and Sam and Steve from Civil War. And you're like, I don't know how Bucky's hand got in this vice. I don't know exactly what they're talking about. You're going to find out because this is a scene from Civil War. And then in context, obviously, it makes sense. But that's a tiny part of the episode. There's a lot more to talk about.
Well, that's what sucked is I was like crying. I was emotional. I was having the best time. It was maybe my favorite episode of all time. And then it kind of kicked me in the nuts at the end. And I was just like, that wasn't cool, man.
Yeah, that's critically you're talking about the sort of the plot kicked you in the nuts is what you're saying.
Well, let's talk about before your nuts got kicked, what else happened in the episode. Pete, overall, I think you've been the biggest fan of this series. How do you feel about how everything wrapped up and what were some of your big moments from the episode?
Oh, my God. Well, as a whole, I really, by the last episode, I was really loving the rhythm of this show. I felt like it was such a cool use of family and kind of us being able to dive into this world and kind of like, I was just really impressed and was loving every minute of it. I really feel like I want more. I want more Ms. Marvel. I don't want her to be in movies, whatever. I feel like this TV show in this world that we've created, I don't want to leave it. I was having so much fun.
Wow.
The Zoe tie-in, like the way things really came together and people were like talking instead of just fighting was really impressive and very smart and well done. And I really also liked how Arian at the end was like, you're fired. You crazy. What the F are you doing flying off the handle? So that was great too. I just was so confused and so upset by the ending. It really undercut, unfortunately, all the things that they had just finished building and was like,
Well, I wouldn't look at it that way. Look at it, again, as a tee up for the Marvels. Don't focus it on too much. Focus on the things you liked and enjoyed. And it seems like you're saying, make yours Miss Marvel.
Nice. This is like Marvel therapy. It's nice. A little bit.
We're all of our podcasts. This is why we podcast so much, is just to work Pete through all of this stuff and get him to a better place.
Otherwise, he might have a Marvel flip out. Which is what we're calling the segment where he does that.
Yeah. Justin, what about you? I think you're on the other end of the spectrum here.
Yeah, a little bit. I was, I did like the themes of family. I feel like this is one of the few shows in general, and Marvel shows specifically, that the family really gathers together. It's not about our main character being separate from their family. It's about our main character being part of a family, and how, like, it really is like a family superhero show on both sides. It's for families to watch, and it's about a family that loves their superhero child. So I did like that. And then we have sort of her friendship family that involved Zoe, a character we haven't seen for five episodes, who came out of nowhere, literally, and joined the team for some reason, which we don't know.
Lighting. Could she explained it perfectly. What are you talking about?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely buy that. And like, she had the real superpower, which is a social media following, which I think is the action that I wanted to see in this show. I was a little disappointed because I felt like this final episode sort of eliminated the stakes. Everyone was like playing. The damage control sort of came out of nowhere and was like much darker and more like nasty than I expected them to be, given the history of damage control in the comics, which is like a goofy organization. And here they're played as like this like dark rogue government organization trying to like
shoot first,
shoot
ask questions.
Kids. So that was very dark, while at the same time all the other characters were like playing around and making like foam explode. And so I was like, this is a weird
that
like
was pretty cool
flip
though.
Flop.
Come on.
It was cool. Like, and all that stuff was cool, but it was a weird flip flop of the stakes where like, and when Kamala's brother shows up, I'm like, what? You don't
know. No, no, that was
here?
A hilarious line. Superheroes don't need chaperones. Take it up with your mom. That was great. That was awesome.
There was some stuff, but I just think from an overall story, I was like, why is all this stuff happening? They're like having a playground day when there's people who then shoot them when they walk out of the school. It was very crazy. And then it was like, they were setting up Cameron to be this sort of villain, but then she lets him go. And then he just goes into the night. It just felt like a little all over the place for me. And I was just a little disappointed by the way it turned out. But like I said, there's a lot of fun stuff. I really like the character. I really like some great imagery here. It's just there was so much fun happening the first two episodes of this series, and we lost a little bit of that by the end, I thought.
Hard disagree. I thought the last episode was chock full of fun and also some really emotional moments that I think really paid off nicely. What I'm worried about is this goddamn love triangle, because the Bruno Cameron of it all and then the Dagger kid, I mean, there's a lot going on. And
is there any way we could get like a third take on this show, or like a third opinion to sort of like really come in and choose a side or offer a third path, perhaps?
I could throw something out there. I do think I understand a lot of what you're saying, Justin. I do disagree on the damage control of it all, because I understand that you're really hooked into the comic book version of them. But I do think they layered in there for the very first episode. Like, the end of the first episode is Damage Control being like, let's go get her. So they set that up, and then they're paying off on that. The problem is, in the middle of that, you had world-ending stakes. And I think that's what you're responding to with Najma and the clandestine, that they were going to end the entire world. I don't know where we left off on that. There was an indication that maybe that power is in Cameron and he could break open the veil, but we don't really get an explanation there in terms of what he's doing or how he's doing it. The other thing that I'll throw out there that I think you're responding to, Justin, in terms of the Cameron of it all, that kept throwing me back and forth, was like, most of the stuff he was doing was not that much more extreme than what Kamala was doing. And then every once in a while, they'd throw in a thing where he's like, and was pushing very hard. And that was supposed to be our indication of like, oh no, he's going too bad. He's going bad. He's taking it too far. But it wasn't clean. Like, it wasn't clean, particularly after we got to the point where the world is about to end because we're going to bring in another dimension one episode prior.
All right. We first saw, as far as not clean, the you can hear the mom calling for Cameron from the other side of the veil or whatever. So it
she
seems,
got rocked and boned.
Yeah. And so it seemed, thank you for bringing that back. So it seems like maybe
that's what it's called.
Cameron is the key to kind of like the veil here. Mm-hmm. And so when he got kind of like super powered up, that almost was like the transformation. And so that's why I was really happy that she kind of like calmed him down, which, you know, as a lot of people need, they just need to talk it out a little bit and calm down.
That's
but
true.
I think
you want a Marvel flip out. But before you move on from that, let me say, is he the key? Is he, because we don't ever get an explanation of like, she said, sends him her power. Is he, can he open the veil? Why are his powers just like Kamala's without explanation when that wasn't how the rest of the powers work? It just felt sort of like there's stuff happening and we don't get to know why or to what end. We just sort of sit and watch it.
But I also like that as part of when kids are in charge and when, you know, it's their, they're not making the best decisions. You know what I mean? Like you've got to fail. You've got to figure things out. So I do appreciate the fact that it's not all clean and perfect right now. It's a little messy as they're trying to figure out who's on whose side. And if they touch hands, the glow is kind of cool. But don't kiss in front of Bruno. I mean, that's fucking heartbreaking.
I do want to mention, not to sideswipe here, but Pete, thank you for continuing the Whisper campaign for my new reality show, Kids in Charge, where it kind of flips the family upside down and the kids are in charge and the adults are kids. They have dessert for dinner the first couple of nights, but then they learn responsibility and some important lessons and really... you know, come to an understanding as a family. It's pretty cool.
Wow, that's really smart. I wish someone had thought to put kids in charge before. Like, that's such a fresh take.
Thank you so much. The actual thing that I wanted to say, though, is I understand what you're saying here, Pete, but one of the things that frustrates me to no end, which is such a TV movie writing thing, is like we were saying, they have plenty of time to have a conversation about stuff. In fact, there's plenty of time for Kamala to be like, for Cameron at any point to be like, how did I get these powers? And nobody asks that question at any point. Nobody discusses it. Not even Bruno, who like is the guy who does that sort of thing. And the very easy answer is Kamala being like, listen, I'm sorry your mom died to save your life. She died a hero. And then I understand that's
the... She did say that.
Eventually, towards the end of the episode. But my point is, even before Bruno was like, whatever you do, don't say this thing to him. That is a key piece of information that actually could avert a lot of everything that's going to happen here. It's,
but you understand plenty of
there's plenty of opportunity for Kamala to tell him exactly what happened, to ask where his mom is. How did I get these powers? Obviously, there's no episode if any of that happens, but it's frustrating to me whenever that happens in a show. It's the same thing like in a TV show or movie where they're like, there's no time to explain. I'll explain on the way. And then they cut to them getting there and they're like, okay, here's what the deal is. And I'm like, you had a 2-hour drive. You talk about it at some point between them. Right, come on,
Justin, come on.
Hashtag show the drives is what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. Real
but
time, baby.
As a line producer, you have to think about what's great television. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And, you know, like a road trip thing seems like a great idea where people are having fun traveling around. But the thing is, it's like, is just two people talking it out good television? No, we want to see action. They got to kind of talk as they're kind of fighting. So yeah, that's, you know, real life versus television. We want some more there. We want it a little bit more layered.
I think, yes, we want action in a show, but I think what Alex is responding to maybe is that when you are taken out of the action because you're like, why is that character doing that weird thing? That character is smart and I like them. And they're doing something that... it is sort of like not smart, or there's an easier solution than what they're doing. It takes you out of the story. And I just felt like there were, like Alex saying, there were a lot of stopping points in this. Like you're saying about Cameron, like, is he evil? Is he out of control? They sort of wobbled between the two. And so then at the end, it's like neither satisfying because he just walks into the Red Dagger and they're buddies now, I guess.
But I like that about the characters, is that they don't always say the right things. And, you know, they are trying to figure it out and are messing up along the way. That make it, you know, I don't like it when a show is too clean or too perfect because it doesn't feel like reality.
I hear that, but I think from a story perspective, the show's not telling us what this character is. Like, I could see messing up, but I want him to be able to mess up, but the show to be like, and here's what he's doing, what he should be doing, or like, we're showing him messing up because that's his character, rather than what I felt like what happened. It was like, what's he doing? Where's he going? Why is he lives with this red dagger who's been trying to kill his family for so long?
Well, are they just going to talk? Like, we'll see how that goes, but it's a very volatile situation.
It's a love pyramid.
Why don't we talk about some of the other characters and where they end up here, as well as some of the other moments before we get too in the weeds or back and forth in this discussion.
Go ahead, Pete. Let me just say, I mean, a sweet Marvel flip in this episode. I mean, come on, with the music and everything.
So just to make a note to the editor, this is where we'll cut out and then come back in 20 minutes. How much time do you need for this one?
Done. Just want to say
you're done. Oh, you're done. Okay.
I just want to say it was sweet.
We touched on this a little bit earlier, but I did love all the scenes with Kamala's family throughout this entire series, in particular in this episode. I thought they were very sweet and nice. I was very surprised that the mom was the one to give her the costume. I thought it was going to be Bruno, but I thought that tied really nicely into the Hulk costume moment from the first episode. So I thought that was a really good payoff there.
I agree. That was cool.
I also really loved every mask scene that we got. Showing the IDs and like him quoting Lincoln was hysterical. That just really, really fun, cool choices that were happening. The kind of boyfriend reveal and like, hey, you witnessed it. That was just, I thought, really, really well done and very cool.
And touching on like some larger, like the line, you can't hide here. This is a mosque in America. Like, I thought that, like, I like those moves. And I feel like this show has done a good job of portraying those situations and what it's like for real people where it's not, where they're just real people in these situations. I think that's really cool. But it did feel wild to have like the boyfriend joke right on top of all of the people in the mosque holding up their IDs because they're terrified for their lives. Yeah. I was like, how are we vacillating tonally from this triggering, scary thing to like jokes? It was sort of wild. But maybe that's the point. Smart. Maybe that's what it's like.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we're going to hit you with some serious stuff. But we're going to kind of pepper some jokes around so it's a little easier to take.
I mean, I think that's part of it. The other thing that I throw out there, and I know I couch every episode of this, but obviously we are not Pakistani, so it's hard to talk about, and we're not Muslim American, so again, hard to talk about. But it does seem like the sort of thing, the way that it was played, is like, this is part of life. Homeland security / damage control is just going to come in here. So we're just going to be ready. We're going to roll with it. It's going to happen. This is how they're dealing with us. It sucks. It's terrible. It's an awful part of America, but it's also a part of life in America the way that it is. So maybe that's what they were getting at there, is just depicting that.
And maybe that sort of makes it clear what damage control is, like a Homeland Security organization that is like super bureaucratic and like messy, and that's why they go rogue and they have all these like super high powered weapons, but are very bad at being soldiers, as we see. They shoot each other, they get ruined by softballs, all that. So maybe that's a good comparison and sort of gives damage control this spot as a scary but also poorly managed organization in the Marvel Universe.
Also, I'll just throw out there the disguises the boss gave them. Very funny. The hats, halal and haram hats.
Yeah.
Good disguises. And led to a fun moment with the costume reveal of Kamala, where she jumps down and says, what are you wearing? And they're like, what are you wearing? Very well. It was fun. It was well delivered.
I love that.
I wanted to, before we get to the big thing, we should still talk about, you know, mutants and stuff. I wanted to throw out to you, did you guys get any sense that maybe Zoe is gay or bisexual in this episode? Because I thought there was like, they very underplayed it, but there was that moment of the first episode where she was complimenting Kamala on her look. And then the way the actress playing Zoe delivered the line to Nakia about like, I would never reveal somebody's secret before they were ready to.
Yeah.
Seemed like they were edging towards that without outright saying it.
But I think very well could be.
But also just, you know, as someone who is maybe has friends or is knows, you know, that it is an issue, is just wording it, you know, properly.
Mm-hmm. And but I was also, I didn't know if it was as explicit as that or if it was like just being like a friend out of nowhere. That's, I think the Zoe character truly came out of nowhere and so was intriguing to have there. But I think there are these open, unanswered questions about her.
Yeah, it also did do a good job, like we were talking about earlier, though, of setting up the brother coming out of nowhere as well. Yeah. Love the brother. Very
funny. He
used
to go to school there, so he can just pop up out of nowhere.
It's great.
And, you know, that's the fun thing about high school.
I end up wandering on my high school randomly a lot, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let's talk about the mutant thing, just in case this moment flew under the radar for you. At the very end of the episode, 2 weeks later, Bruno, before he leaves to Caltech, tells Kamala that, as one does, he was running her genetic makeup and found something interesting in there. First of all, her brother doesn't have the same Jin genes as she does, but he also noticed a mutation on her genes, possibly the one that allows her to actually use the powers properly versus what was going on with Cameron, where the powers were a little out of control and they seemed to be hurting him. She was able to channel the bangles that way, and the power of it, and it was coming from her. And then, as Pete has been indicating, we get a little sting of the X-Men 97 theme, and then Kamala says, it's just another label, who cares? Meanwhile, the rest of the internet cares. From being super excited because they've been waiting for some mention of mutants in the Marvel Universe to apparently there's a lot of huge Inhuman fans who are very upset that they've taken that part of her origin away.
Wait, seriously, there's Inhuman fans?
Burn.
Hey, I'm sorry if I just
legitimately, I saw tweets like this where people are like, how dare they remove her Inhuman heritage? And I'm like, dude, if I asked you yesterday about it, you would not be able to name a single thing.
But, first off, you explaining how this potential mutation helps her, makes her powers work. That's confusing. That's wildly confusing. So you're saying the mutation helps her channel the energy that comes from the bangle better than Cameron's lack of bangle or mutation to channel the energy that comes from through the veil from Noor. Mm-hmm. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, I guess so.
Crazy.
I think it is crazy. It is. It feels like a hat on a hat here because
hats and hats and hats. It's like make way for caps. You know what I'm talking about?
Caps for sale.
That's what I'm talking about.
Stay away, you monkeys. You know what I'm talking about.
Stay away, you monkeys. Stop stealing those caps, monkeys.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But it is. We've already gone through this whole thing of like, surprise, you're not this thing. You're actually a djinn. And to be like, surprise, you're not just a djinn, which was already controversial. You're also a mutant. And in fact, the first mutant, ignoring the Professor Xavier cameo in Multiverse of Madness, which I don't think exactly counts. This is the first introduced mutant in the main MCU continuity. It's a weird twist right at the end there.
Okay,
it's one of the few things in the Marvel Comics universe that she is not. Like, it's like so far away from, you could have made a case.
Well, hold on. I will throw out there that like frequent comic book readers will know this, but when X-Men was owned by Fox and the rest of Marvel was in the MCU, you're nodding your head no, but this is absolutely
because
true.
You're about to explain something wildly complicated again.
I'll do it as simple as possible. Basically, Marvel Comics was like, well, since we don't want to support the X-Men, we're going to push the Inhumans to the forefront. We got this big TV show coming. They're a big deal. Everybody's Inhumans now. That's where the powers come from. Kamala's an Inhuman. Let's go. All these other characters are Inhuman. They have these secret genes. And then the TV show flopped, and people were kind of annoyed about pushing Inhumans over the X-Men and the comic books. And now it's all under one roof with Disney. It doesn't matter anyway. So it does feel like, actually, in a weird way, a little bit of a nod to her comic book origins, even if
of the corporate shenanigans around them.
That's what she sort of said. Bruno said, like, I detected something. I detected something in your genes. It's corporate shenanigans.
I've got a bunch of that going on too. I have microplastics and corporate shenanigans.
What's your take on this? What's your reaction?
Well, I wanted to say a joke that you did a while back that I was trying to squeeze in there that I was hoping in post every time someone said mutant, we could do the little
We don't actually do anything in post. I know we were joking about that before. But.
Well, you know, there's the first time for everything.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that work. What?
Because it's weird to hear somebody say Marvel Vision. Not have it.
We do the work. we do not do the work.
We do the work. Do not do it. With the work. Yeah, I mean, like we've been talking about, I think it's unnecessary. It's finally giving like a little bit of a nod, I guess, to fans who have been asking for this in every single Disney Plus show. It feels like a swerve that comes out of nowhere. And setting up beyond that.
Is this the first true introduction of mutants in the MCU? I don't think so. This feels like a very strange place to put it. And I also think she could be an Inhuman. She could be Kree. She could be an Eternal. There's a lot of options here that tie more directly into stuff happening in the MCU already. To then swerve her and throw the term mutant out there, I feel like they'll end up backpedaling from it, and she's going to end up being one of those things.
I think more than that, it doesn't really matter. Like, I think they were throwing it in there as a little Easter egg to fans, and like she says, like, who cares? So I kind of hope they don't explore it anymore. I don't want to see it in the Marvels. I do think there is a slight possibility, and this is getting into potential spoilers, but I think these rumors are very much out there. There's been a lot of talk about how Namor the Submariner is going to be the villain in Black Panther 2, and that we're going to meet him. He is a mutant in the comic book. So it might be sort of thing to just like get the idea of mutations out there into the MC universe, and then they get into Namor being, you know, a mutant, or like the first mutant.
That's crazy to be like, Namor, not a mutant anybody wants to see. No one's like, my favorite X-Man, mutant, Namor.
All of those things, though. I don't know.
I mean, someone likes Cypher. In general. If somebody's a fan of Cypher, there's going to be a Namor fan.
Well, this is what it's all building towards. Like, a lot of people have been asking, where is the MCU going? What is it building towards? We don't have the same direction in phase 1 through 3 as we do in phase 4. This is where it starts, people. We get this mention of mutations with Kamala Khan, that we meet the first mutant, Namor the Submariner, in Black Panther 2, and it all leads up to Cypher Reckoning, the big event coming in 2027.
Yeah.
Wow.
Put away your dictionaries. Cypher's coming. Cypher rising. One last thing. I thought it was very funny that you referred to the mutation comment as an Easter egg. Because I don't know how people celebrate Easter out there, but it's rarely when an Easter egg is thrown into your face. Lots of Easter eggs are hidden. You have to go find them. Then you pick up an egg and it explodes with chocolate and Cadbury goo in the middle.
Oh, that sounds fun, though.
Here's a little bit of an Easter egg. Did you guys notice that she was in her classic Miss Marvel costume in this episode? That's
really cool. Yes. Yeah.
We did. I know. I didn't. Couldn't believe it.
And we got the shot of her on the lamppost, just like out of the comic. That was great.
Yes.
But I want to say, though, circling back to the family, I really love the mom and dad in this show, and the dad especially, like, you know, his kind of awe of his daughter on the roof was just so emotional, so moving. The whole kind of him saying Miss Marvel was so great. I really love the how they're kind of dealing with the parents and stuff like that in the show. And I really think it's a backbone. I mean, that Hulk thing is still such a great moment. So I really am impressed with how they're kind of doing that.
All right. Well, there we go. Before we wrap up here, we've certainly talked a lot about future stuff, but why don't we go to our vision board and talk about what we want to see from Miss Marvel next. Obviously, we know she's going to show up in the Marvels, but what are you looking forward to from whatever her next appearance is?
Well, I mean, I guess I want more of the family being the core and being super supportive of her. So a continuation of that. But in general, I guess a little bit more of what we saw in the first two episodes, that sort of wildly creative vision for the show, and seeing her sort of worldview, like all the the way the production showed us sort of how she sees the world, I thought was fun. And more Jersey City, the Jersey City of it all, I think is a cool world to have, to really lock down on those things. Her being a little clumsy, messing up all the time. That's where I think the fun for the character is.
I just want to get a little bit more of her, not only training with her powers, but kind of like being able to, you know, like this, she really stepped up and was kind of like, we really got to see a lot of her powers and what's possible. And I just want to kind of see her kind of like playing with that and enjoying it a little bit, because, you know, unfortunately in this, she was just kind of using it for what she had to do. So it'd be nice to see her kind of like having some fun with it, because when she's having fun, I'm having fun.
Well, I will say, we didn't mention this during the podcast proper, but she did say in Biggin, in the climactic action sequence, which was very fun. And then her arms and legs grew bigger. I actually couldn't tell with the CGI. It was a little weird because I don't like the energy was stretching around her, but she didn't physically get it either.
The kind of glowing thing made her kind of like bigger and kind of grew her.
So that was very fun. I think something that I would love to see in the Marvels and beyond, and I'm sure they'll do this, is just more uses for her power. Now that we've seen her like jump on platforms a bunch and do the embiggening thing, all of those are very fun. What creative, interesting stuff can they do with this energy constructs? Because as we know from Green Lantern, as we know from other characters, it's kind of limitless what they can do. So I want to see them really stretch their imagination and do something creative visually.
Because it's exhausting. She has to run everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to check in with you guys about like who you're shipping here, because am I the only one that's like feel heartbroken that Bruno is like going off to school and kind of leaving the band here? I was pulling for Bruno, and it was just like, I don't know. It seems like that's over because he's going to college.
Yeah, it feels like, I don't know. I guess if I had to choose, I'm a Miss Dagger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I was going to say Team Red Dagger here. I feel like they have absolutely the best chemistry, even 100%. With the Cameron kiss that almost happened in this episode. And Bruno will be back. If there is a second season of Miss Marvel, which I think there might be, like almost of all of the shows that we've watched so far, it feels most likely that they'll have a Miss Marvel season two.
This feels the most like a show, like a refillable show that they could just keep doing stuff. And honestly, I would appreciate the show more if it was more of a standalone episode thing rather than like what we saw here, which is more of the standard Marvel like movie broken up formula. Mm-hmm.
I 100% agree with that. And I've been kind of surprised by that feeling, because I'm all for shorter runs on TV shows. But this is something that I think, like, bring it back for 13 episodes for season two, you know, just like really explore the characters, dig into it, have an episode that's just like, I don't know, a bottle episode that maybe doesn't
standalone
tie to
the eps.
Exactly.
Would love it.
Or maybe like 24 episodes.
Maybe 1,000 episodes. Maybe never stop producing episodes. Just live it. Live the dream.
Turn the cameras on. Documentary. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Kids in charge, baby. That's what it's all about.
Dude, you guys know that your kids run your lives. Don't act like it's not like that.
Dessert for
dinner
every night.
Here we go. Non-parent has checked in with some takes.
If you'd like to support this podcast and other podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Marvel Vision Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Obviously, there's a couple of weeks here to go until the next one.
Show's over now.
Show's over. I mean, obviously, we'll be back for She-Hulk when that premieres in August. Maybe between then and there, now and then, we'll check in with some of the other Marvel movies like we've been doing. But whatever happens next, stay marvelous.
Beautiful.